The Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live.
Game 4 was in Milwaukee last night, and it didn't fall in favor of the Suns. But Game 5 brings us right back home here in Phoenix. I'm joined by Jordan Spurgeon. So excited to be hosting the show today, even though it's following a Suns loss. We don't love covering a losing team here in the Valley, but they're not really a losing team. We're in the NBA Finals, so that's a big win in itself. But if there's anything, Spurge, I've learned in this series, is that these teams are just going to win at home. So I don't know about you, but I'm like, hey, this is going to go to Game 7 because we're just going to keep going home and winning some games.
I mean, I'll tell you, that's how a lot of people feel. The Suns obviously don't like it in Milwaukee. Brad, who's traveling back, is indifferent about being in Milwaukee. He's looking forward to get back to the Valley, but the Suns got to be looking forward to it as well. Today, coming up in the show, I'm going to talk with Evan Sedery from Forbes Sports. He's got some insight on kind of what happened last night, but it was an ugly game for the Suns on the road. That 109-103 loss, Claudia, it was a tough one to swallow for a lot of Suns fans, and it really was a game where they were leading for most of the first half despite playing like really, really bad. And so people were like, oh, we should be getting blown out. And then despite playing bad pretty much the entire game outside of Devin Booker, they still were within six at the end of the game. So it's a really hard game to kind of analyze after last night.
I mean, the sad thing is Devin Booker was absolutely on fire. He scored 42 points. And if that wasn't enough, I don't know if you know this, I'm sure you do, but he now has the most career points in a first career postseason, which is absolutely awesome. I think we've talked about it so much, but it's so fun to see like Devin Booker be known by everybody now. Like he was kind of like that name that like you and I knew about and people here in the Valley knew about. People who probably watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians might know about. I like recently learned that him and Kendall Jenner are dating. I don't know. Maybe that's not true, but that's what I've heard. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, like the only people I know who don't live in Phoenix that know who he is before this was because he was dating Kendall Jenner. And I was like, there is so much more to Devin Booker than that. Like, have you seen him play? And he's just been, I mean, he's had a few games in the postseason that obviously haven't been the best, but when he performs, he like overperforms. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, Devin Booker's having a time. He's glad to be winning. But even last night, people asked him about how does it feel to score 42? And he goes, it doesn't matter because we lost. Like, he's a winner through and through. And so just seeing him in the finals is great. But that's not enough for him. Like, he wants to win. There's a reason where he's going to go straight from the NBA Finals. I'm guessing might have to miss the parade if they were to win a championship and go straight to Tokyo, because that's who he is and that's what he wants to do. And, you know, that USA team might need a Devin Booker and Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday too to go help them out with some of their struggles they've had overseas so far with their two losses. But, you know, it's cool to see Devin Booker. Yeah, everyone needs a Devin Booker. Like, that's just, everyone can use a guy like Book. He's something special, and they're really going to need that.
So you got to watch the game a little bit more than I did. Full disclosure, I was doing a wedding food tasting, which is like, I'm not really complaining. I got a lot of free food, so that's nice. But what did I miss? Like, I know Devin Booker was on fire. So what caused this loss other than not being at home?
Yeah, a lot of it was just the rebounding and turnovers. It's really a simple game when you look at it. Out rebounded on the offensive board 17-5. Committed 17 turnovers, only forced 5 turnovers. That's the difference in the game. They shot over 50%, but Milwaukee shot 19 more times. So despite only shooting 40%, they were able to, you know, stay in the game and then ultimately run away with it there at the end. And they're actually the first team to win a game where they shot 10% worse than the opposing team in the NBA Finals. So the Bucks, I mean, you got to give them credit. They played well. But for the Suns, it's going to come down to offensive adjustments. The defense is playing fine, but they need guys like Chris Paul to have, you know, an average game. DeAndre Ayton needs to be aggressive. He looked kind of slow last night. Cam Johnson, I think we all like Cam Johnson. Every time he speaks too, he sounds like a doctor. Like, he just like, he's so smart. Like, he's so smart. And you see it on the court too. And so I think we need to see more of him on the floor too. And that'll really make an adjustment for the Suns moving forward.
I think one thing that's super undeniable about this series is like, Suns fans are awesome. Like, you and I both know that. You've been to a lot of the watch parties at the stadium. Were you at the D-backs one?
Did not go to that one last
okay.
night.
No, all the other ones, though. No. I mean, hey, I know Phoenix fans can rally the Valley, But honestly, like the Bucks fans are they're a pretty good crowd. We were talking beforehand how they always shut down the streets right outside of the stadium, and they get to watch the game out there. And I think that would be so fun, except we would need medics everywhere, because that just doesn't work in Phoenix. You can't have an outdoor watch party I'm sure people are getting there 2 hours beforehand to like be right in the front at the bar, at the gate, and kind of celebrating there. I mean, imagine 5 hours in the sun and 110 degrees, 20 if we're having a heat wave. Like, it just doesn't work here.
Yeah, it's tough in Phoenix, but the fans are doing a great job. But Milwaukee, I mean, it's different. I know Brad will talk about it more. He's been talking about it in the shows in Milwaukee, but they have that small town vibe, and it's really all localized just around the arena. So you got all the bars there, you've got the arena, and it's all localized there. And then you move past it, and it's just kind of normal life. That's just how it is, especially in the Midwest, especially in Milwaukee. Here, the only difference is we may not be outside the arena in the same numbers, even though it's a sold-out arena, but everywhere you go, any city around the valley, you're seeing purple and orange everywhere. That's why I did a piece on restaurants doing all kinds of crazy Suns themed things, because everyone's so in on this team. And with a team that's never won a championship before, they're eager. And now they're a little bit nervous about that happening this year. They still got 2 games at home in the best of 3 series now, but a lot of people are nervous about the Suns after what happened last night.
Okay. So this might just be like the natural baseball fan in me. I never was superstitious until I became a sports fan, but I'm kind of thinking this Suns and four thing, saying it all the time. It made me nervous. I'm like, stop saying that. It's not going to be Suns and four if you keep putting that out into the universe. It never works out that way. I don't know about you, but I was it's not going to happen, because there's too much hype and too much, obviously you want to win in four. You want to win as fast as possible, but the pressure to live up to the meme is kind of ridiculous and hilarious at the same time. And fortunately, that's passed, so that now there's no deadline that this team needs to be that team that, you know, did what everyone thought they were going to do.
Yeah, I mean, the Suns and four thing was fun, but like Monty said last night, I wrote it up on the board today. It's not supposed to be easy, and Suns fans are learning that. Suns players are learning that. I think they understand it. I think the best video on social last night, I don't know if we're going to pull it up or not, but when Monty was giving that speech in the locker room, you see Dario Saric there just sitting there just getting super into the speech and just shaking his head yeah, we need to do that. We need to do that. And it was just it was the funniest thing, but it's so true. Hopefully the entire team is buying into that. That's kind of what Monty Williams has created there with the culture. And so if they have, this team will be fine. If not, this could be a series that does end with Bucks winning in six. If the Bucks win tomorrow, on Saturday, it's a series where I think Suns fans have to prepare. If they don't win game five, it's pretty much over at this point.
I'm glad you said that, because I could not be in more agreement. The Suns have to win game five in order for this, because I think if they win game five, the series is theirs. I mean, like we said, there's also the home court advantage that I think that the Suns have proven to us that it's a thing. I think Suns fans can get them hyped up. I know it's not all about that. You got to play well and perform well. But if you're winning game five, you can handle going on the road to Milwaukee one more time, potentially winning game six, but worst case scenario, you're back in Phoenix for game seven. And whatever, I'm going to say things I shouldn't say, but I don't have a problem with going to game seven and winning. I have a problem with going to game seven and watching them lose, because I don't think you can. Fans are going to love the Suns no matter what, but man, it would stink to watch the Suns lose a game seven in Phoenix. But I'm pretty optimistic that the series is theirs as long as Saturday it goes in their favor.
Yeah, so we've got more coming up in the show, Claudia. By the way, long-winded, but opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. Desert Financial Credit Union, they're a great partner here at Sports 360 AZ. And so with those long opening comments, we wanted to make sure we get them in there as well. But you have a great interview coming up next, right?
Oh, yeah. I talked with the Bella Twins. They're WWE Hall of Famers. They also are graduates of Chaparral High School, where they played soccer. They're also longtime Suns fans, lifelong. That part of the interview isn't in there because we kind of threw it out a week ago. But they kind of reminisced on their, growing up and watching the Suns be as good as they were. And now that they feel like this Suns team is the team that they grew up watching. And I think it was, Brie Bella was telling me that she remembered her and her sister writing a song about the Suns and calling into a local radio station to sing the song about the Suns. So they have some Suns tie there, but they're so fun to talk with. You guys will absolutely love the interview. They're a blast.
Yeah, that's going to be a good interview as well. We're also talking with Evan Sittery from Forbes Sports today to talk about the Suns and talk about his journey with his Substack that he's got going on and a podcast and all that great stuff. So that's all coming up next. We'll be right back on the Brad Sessmatt Show.
I'm thrilled to be joined by Brie and Nikki Bella. They're WWE Hall of Famers and Chaparral High School alumni. We're talking about the WWE SummerSlam that'll be in Las Vegas on August 21st at Allegiant Stadium. For the two of you being from Phoenix, how exciting is it to have a WWE event within driving distance of the Valley?
Oh, I think it's great. And I also love the fact that, you know, everything is opened up and I think people are just ready. They're ready. Shows, they're ready to be back with people, and there's nothing better than going to a wrestling show, to a WWE event. And the fact that you can drive to Las Vegas, which you already get a lot of energy from Vegas, but then to be at the new stadium and to watch SummerSlam and just see it all live again, I just think it's going to be incredible.
You were both inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2020. 2020 was kind of a crazy year, so I'm sure it was nice to have something to celebrate. Did you ever imagine that you would be Hall of Famers?
Oh, gosh. No. Being Hall of Famers is a dream come true. I mean, in our industry, it's like winning the Oscar. And I'm so proud that Brie and I have this achievement. And I think being moms, being what 2020 brought us, it was like a perfect ending to such a beautiful chapter for the past 15 years. And it just makes you reflect and look back at all of your hard work and just feel so extremely appreciated. But the fact that for the rest of my life, I get to call myself a WWE Hall of Famer is amazing.
I want to know from both of you, do you have a favorite memory from playing soccer at Chaparral High School?
Oh, yes. It was any time we'd play Arcadia High School. The ride was so amazing. I also think, too, Nikki and I, we made the varsity team freshmen. That was a really big deal for us. So we worked hard, and the newspaper came out with this thing. It said double trouble for Chaparral soccer team. I still have the clipping. And I think, honestly, from that day on, we've always been a tag team. But from that day on, the tag team really started between the Bella twins.
I agree. I mean, high school soccer with Chaparral was just some of my favorite memories from high school. It was so incredible. And I'll never forget being claimed co-champions. You never thought that could actually happen in a sport, but you know, women's soccer was touchy then in that moment, and they wouldn't let us have PKs to determine who was the champion. So I will never forget that actually in sports, we have been declared co-champions.
You know, I forgot about that.
Right? I remember
that's a Ted Lasso moment right there.
Very Ted Lasso, Brie.
Well, I love that little trip down memory lane, but bringing it back to right now, I understand you're both moms and you've had kids within a day apart, which is crazy, being twins and then doing that. Did all of this inspire your new baby product line?
Oh,
you know, it did. I'm going to start. This is Brie, and I have been waiting for my sister to be a mom with me. And let's be honest, if you watch Total Bellas, we never thought that was going to happen. And the fact that it did happen is just, for me, it's a miracle and amazing. And the fact that I could share being a mother with my twin sister is incredible. And our boys are born 22 hours apart, which when they say weird stuff happens to twins, yes, it does. But, you know, it's become our lives. So we thought it was only appropriate to kind of create a baby line together, because let's be honest, when you're a mom, your like gear you wear is baby gear all day long.
To be a part of a company and be a partner with Kalugo was just a win-win for us, because we're obsessed with their products. And one thing the Bellas love is fashion. And being a new mom, I did not want my fashion to lack. I wanted it to continue with Mateo and with what I have to rock every day with him, stroller, baby carrier, diaper tote. So it's been really fun just designing with them as well.
WWE Hall of Famers Brie and Nikki Bella here with me today. How is it that two girls who played soccer in the Valley, how do you go from that to being on the world stage in WWE?
You know, it's crazy because when I saw the women wrestling, I kind of felt much the same as being a soccer player. You know, unfortunately for women back in the day when Nikki and I were coming up, I mean, the U.S. women's soccer team was starting to become big, but the league folded here in the United States. So there was no way to really, after college, to really have a job in, as a soccer player. So what was the next greatest thing where you could kind of showboat, be aggressive, be athletic is, you know, WWE. It's like you get to be a character, you could be athletic, the mix of it all. And we were really drawn to that because of our soccer history. So it kind of felt like going from one really empowering sport for women to the next.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly felt like, I mean, one, I feel like Chaparro really helped start to train us in a way of being ready for the world stage. Cause we, I mean, everyone knows Firebirds just rock at all sports. And I'm sure they still do, especially in 4A. And I know it was always rumored we should have been 5A, but I felt like there was so much showboating with the Firebirds. And then like Bree said, we were lucky to grow up with the Women's World Cup soccer team with Mia Hamm and Carla Overbeck and Brandi Chastain, and the list goes on. And I just remember taking those women and what they did on the soccer field and with me onto the ring and on the ramp. And it's just been incredible.
So Friday Night SmackDown will actually be in Phoenix on August 20th. So very close to home for you and for all of us here in the Valley. What can people expect from WWE events if they've never been to one?
Oh my goodness. You know, the one thing I'd say about WWE events, whether you're a fan or you're not, when you go, you're going to become addicted. The energy of the crowd, the pyro, the characters that come out, and just the in-ring work that you see, it's really incredible. All my friends who weren't fans, every time they went to a WWE event, they left being a fan because seeing it live is just so incredible.
I agree. And the energy, even from the talent alone, they haven't been wrestling in front of a live crowd. So they're going to have this whole new energy going into it. And it's just going to be spectacular. And when you could be there at the beginning, and that's why you have to go to SummerSlam, you have to go to SmackDown, because you're going to get energy that you just can't recreate later on.
Bree, Nikki, it's been so much fun chatting with you both today. WWE SummerSlam will be in Las Vegas on August 21st, and you can get your tickets on Ticketmaster.
Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm obviously not the big guy. I'm Jordan Spurgeon filling in today. We're talking a lot of Suns. Tough loss last night. Tough two losses against the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee. So as Brad travels back, we want to continue chopping up the Suns. I'm bringing in Evan Settery, as promised, from Forbes Sports. Evan, you've been covering this team for a while. We're going to get into kind of what you're doing now with your Substack and your podcast and all of that. But first off, let's get into this game. So last night, tough loss for the Suns, 109-103. Got demolished in the offensive rebound category, got demolished in the turnover battle. But outside of that, or maybe including that, what really stood out to you in why they lost this game?
I think, honestly, I don't want to put a lot of blame on one person, but I think if Chris Paul would have given at least just an average game last night, I think the Suns win that game. Just Chris Paul just seemed out of rhythm throughout, just making some careless mistakes. He finished with 5 turnovers. He has 15 in the last 3 games, too. Drew Holiday and the Bucks guards are really getting pressure on him in his face. He's not responding well to it so far. So if Chris Paul can bounce back, the Suns are in a good spot. But if this continues, where the Bucks might have figured out Chris Paul a little bit to try to get him out of rhythm and rattled, this is a series that could go 7, and it's going to be a really tough series from here if the Suns don't have anyone else outside Devin Booker that gives them anything in the backcourt.
Yeah, it's easy to see, like with Chris Paul last night, you know, Monty saying he seemed healthy on the broadcast. You can see him going for his wrists a little bit. Do you think it might just be a case of his legs just being a little bit tired? Like, that's what it looked like to me last night. He just looked tired, and that's why he seemed to be careless with the ball, and his jumper just had no life on it.
Yeah, I think it's a really fair assessment. That's something I thought too last night, because we all know with Chris Paul's history that the big thing is injury concerns in the playoffs, fatigue as well, and he did look like his legs were a little bit lost last night, and that's a little bit concerning heading forward. I know there's 2 days between games, but Chris Paul needs to be on his A game, especially against his Bucks team, where they've shown now when they were down 2-0, their back's against the wall, they're not going anywhere. This is going to be a series unlike the Nuggets, unlike the Lakers or the Clippers. This team's fully healthy. They have Giannis. They have Chris Middleton, went for 40 points last night. Drew Holiday, when he's on, is a very good player, all-star caliber player as well. This is a team in Milwaukee that is a serious threat to upset the Phoenix Suns if they're a 2-0 lead. And the Suns have to bounce back. They have to be able to get back on their A game, have better ball movement, play more disciplined defense as well, and have people around Devin Booker step up. Booker did not have a great game in game three. He had an awesome game in game four. And it was the other way around in the game three. Paul had a good game and Booker had a clunker. So it's everyone has to be in rhythm at the same time because this Bucks team is not going anywhere.
What adjustments do you think the Suns need to make? Because the one thing I've seen the Bucks do the last two games is bug Chris Paul up the floor. And that's part of the reason why I think he's getting tired. Drew Holiday is covering him all 94 feet. And it seems like that's working for the Bucks. The Suns had success whenever he was able to get the ball up quicker, or if he passed it off to Bridges or Crowder or Booker, and they kind of ran it up to floor to set up the offense. But what adjustments do you think they need to make heading into game five as they return home?
Yeah, I would say mostly it's on the offensive side. Defensively last night, I honestly like what they did against Giannis. There's a lot of moments where there's Ayton or Crowder, Ayton and Bridges, got multiple guys coming at him when he was in the lane, going toward the basket. We didn't see them the first couple games of this series where that wall was actually working for the Suns last night. Giannis still put up 24 points, 8 assists, and a double-digit rebounds, but it wasn't a typical Giannis monster performance we've seen the last couple of games. So I like what they're doing on defense against Giannis. If Chris Middleton gives you 40-plus points, you're just going to have to take that, because if you're going to go all in against Giannis, someone's going to step alongside him, and it was Middleton last night. But offensively, honestly, play Cam Johnson more. Every single time Cam Johnson has been in this series and in this playoffs, he's so clutch. He just, for a second-year player, I haven't seen a guy so composed on a big stage like Cam Johnson. And last night, in the first couple minutes, he makes his first shot. You tweeted us during the series, Jordan, like every time that Cam Johnson checks in, he makes a basket right away. It's just one of those things where I think if Mikal Bridges does not have it, or if Jay Crowder has a poor game shooting, I think Cam Johnson, either way, should be playing 30-plus minutes right now. I think he's their second-best offensive player behind Devin Booker in this series, which says a lot about where the Suns are right now. I really think Cam Johnson should play more. Maybe you play Johnson alongside the wings and maybe play Devin Booker at point guard in some moments instead of Campaign, who really has not been well throughout this series against the Bucks as well. Maybe some point book action, maybe a little bit more Cam Johnson. That's what I would try to do. I think the defense is doing well, but really the offensive adjustments need to be there a little bit more.
And doubling down on Cam Johnson too, I mean, just sitting in on his pressers, he's wise beyond his years. I mean, he sounds like the smartest person in the room, and that's a room with Chris Paul and Jay Crowder, two very smart, savvy veteran players. He sounds like he just, like, gets it. And so I think that's a fair assessment to see him play more minutes. What would you tell Suns fans right now? I think a lot of them figured it'd be a quick series, but like Monty said last night, I wrote it up on the board, you know, it's not supposed to be easy. Let me figure out how to look at my camera. It's not supposed to be easy. I mean, heading into the series, you figured it would be a long series, right? 6 or 7 games.
Yeah, I figured. I right before the series started, I said Suns in 7. I thought it'd be a grueling classic series, and we're seeing that so far, where it's 2-2. The Bucks had hold a 6-point overall point differential through 4 games, so it's a super close one throughout. Suns win the first 2 by double digits. The Bucks win by 20 in game 3. Then we get a classic game 4 where Giannis has a historic block in DeAndre and around the rim. So I think these next 3 games, if it gets to that point, are going to be very close throughout. I still think Suns in 7, I think home court advantage, especially with how their environments are in Phoenix and Milwaukee, are very important right now. Just with the post-pandemic, having no crowds throughout the year, I think it's actually making a difference this playoff run, which says a lot about just the atmosphere for both sides. But I still say Suns in 7, but game 5, Jordan is going to decide this. If the Bucks win game 5, I am very, very, very concerned for the Suns.
Evan Setter rejoining me from Forbes Sports talking Suns after a loss last night to the Bucks. So they return home on Saturday. Last thing about them before we kind of get into what you're doing and how you're covering the Suns. Do you think the extra day's rest, the 2 days in between series, has any sort of effect on these teams? Like, I still feel like they feel tired. And for the Suns especially, I feel like it's gotten them out of rhythm almost, just having that extra day. And I don't know if they quite know what to do with that extra time.
Yeah, it's a really valid point where throughout this series up until the finals, this playoff run for the Suns, it was just a day between games. I think the Suns played around 20 games in 40 days before this happened. And I think right now the extra day gives them more time to rest. I don't think there's a lot more on-court time. I think it's just more so is fatigue and letting those guys rest when need be. Because a lot of these guys like Booker, Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, our top five in the playoffs and minutes played so far. So those guys need the extra time of rest. So I think fatigue is maybe plays a little bit of factor of that with the extra rest. But honestly, I think maybe just tactical stuff, X's and O's. It's a lot more diving into film, more time of doing that, where I think both teams know each other so well right now that it's going to be so hard to find those little advantages where you can, because the Bucks are showing they can counter to the Suns. The Suns are showing they can counter to the Bucks. It's reached that point of the series. Even Chris Paul alludes to that last night at his press conference, where both teams know exactly what they're doing. They can call it the plays when they want to. So these next three games are just going to be simply mano a mano, who has the better talent and the best of three series. I mean, you can't ask for anything better as an NBA fan, but the Suns being up 2-0, it is a little nervous from that side of things.
So I want to get into you a little bit. So your journey to Forbes Sports. So take us through from college to then covering the Suns for Forbes Sports and doing your own thing as well.
Yeah. So I actually am from Indiana. I moved out here about 5 years ago. I attended Ball State University in Indiana for a couple of years, then actually ended up transferring out here to Arizona State. I took an opportunity with Brightside of the Sun of SB Nation at the time to cover the Phoenix Suns. Also did some work for ASU on the side. So I ended up going to school, finishing my degree at Arizona State. And then over the last couple of years, I've been staying on the grind with journalism, as you know, Jordan, just trying to find the right opportunities. And I landed with Forbes Sports. I've been with them for the last couple months. I took a little bit of time off to go back during the pandemic, but I've been back since then, to really just enjoying the journey so far. And as you allude to the top of the show, I do have a Substack, which people can support my journey as well, trying to be a full-time writer. And I run my podcast over on Substack as well. It's called the Sunscribe Podcast. I have guests on that cover the Suns. I also cover some analysis as well on there. So it's been fun so far. I can't complain. This Suns season so far has been incredible from a media perspective, and I think it's a sign of things to come. It's been a really fun journey so far.
Yeah, you guys can check him out on Twitter at eSittery to check out his Substack. It's really good content, and I see a lot more people doing that. Like, I know Gina Mizell, who's working for Suns.com now, when she got laid off by The Athletic, she kind of started her own thing, and it turned into that. Is that sort of something that you're hoping to grow? Like, I know when you said you were launching it, it's kind of helping you get rid of a day job and kind of figure out, you know, how to make a little bit more money and kind of go into this full time. Like, what's that all about for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you have a passion, you want to pursue it full. Like, that's where I'm at in my point in my career, where I want to do this full time. I want to be a full time journalist and do things that make you happy, that make you, that when you have the full time and the support from others to just dive in full speed, it makes the content better. It makes your own personal journey better. It makes it even more rewarding in the end. So having Forbes, having Sunscribe.substack.com on the side as well to do both things at once, it's been fun. I mean, I think honestly, it's one of those things where when you have the opportunity, I think any independent journalist out there should look into places like Substack or Patreon. They help out so much, where if you can have the support system around you, you can do things more at your speed and really dive more in depth and things you weren't possible before. I think it's a really fun opportunity, and Substack has helped me do that a little bit over the last couple months.
So with that too, I guess we're going to go back into the Suns. So this question has pretty much been asked by everybody when someone from the Suns or someone covering the Suns comes on, but you've been around the team since 2017. You've been kind of covering them in and out, on and off. Did you ever imagine when you saw those Suns teams in 2017 that a few years later we would see them in an NBA Finals and two games away from potentially clinching and winning an NBA championship?
If you thought back then that the Suns would be in the championship in 2021, you must have the lucky lottery numbers, because I never honestly thought that, Jordan, where it was to the point where covering this team since 2017, seeing them in the rock bottom, it was just poor basketball to watch every single night on the court, where it was Devin Booker and nothing around him. Obviously, people knew Devin Booker was a star back then, but seeing him kind of get his flowers now is a really rewarding thing for Booker, but also people that covered him back then, because we knew how good of a player he was. But having guys like Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris bust down the top 10, having poor free agent signings like Trevor Ariza, who just seemed like he cashed his paycheck here, nothing else. I think James Jones kind of rode the ship that Ryan McDonough was sinking at the last part of his tenure, where it honestly seems like the Suns have it figured out now. McDonough was just hoping for lottery picks, hoping to bet on those guys. When you don't hit on those lottery picks that you intentionally tank for 4 straight years, it's not going to work out well. So honestly, James Jones has the right formula, trading for Chris Paul, signing the right veterans, making the right moves at the right time. the difference between Jones and McDonough, I think, is the reason why the Suns are here. And obviously getting Monty Williams, who chose the Suns over the Los Angeles Lakers, is a huge moment in Suns history where we've seen already how good of a coach Monty Williams is. And he's going to be the coach, I imagine, for the next decade plus for the Suns, Dan.
Yeah, Williams has changed a lot. James Jones, worthy of Executive of the Year. It's incredible to see what the Suns have done. Last thing for you, Evan, before I get you out of here. Game 5, early predictions. I know we've got a couple days to kind of sift through press conferences and rewatch tape and stuff, but how do you see this one shaping out?
Oh, after last night, I would have said Suns, but I'm honestly on the fence right now. Like you mentioned, I'll have to go back and rewatch the game this morning and see exactly what happened, but I'm still leaning towards Suns. I think Vegas actually has them favored by 3.5 or 4 points right now. Home court advantage does hold firm throughout this series. I still think Suns in 7. So if I want my prediction to hold true, I'm going to go with Suns and winning game 5. I think Devin Booker has a solid game again. I think he's kind of figured out exactly how to move against his Bucks defense, which is a great sign for the last 3 games. But I think we're going to see someone like Chris Paul or DeAndre Ayton step up alongside him. Either one of those guys. It has to happen in game 5 or the Suns are in trouble on Saturday. Chris Paul needs to bounce back. I think it's the biggest thing right now is 15 turnovers in the last 3 games. He's out of rhythm offensively. He's going to have to change something up. And if we get vintage Chris Paul performances over the last 3 games, the Suns are in a good spot. But this is going to be a very tough game to call on Saturday because Milwaukee has all the momentum. They're playing with house money heading into Phoenix. And all the pressure's on the Suns. They haven't been in this situation throughout the playoffs so far outside the first round against the Lakers, where many predicted the upset anyways, the Lakers, since they were the defending champions of LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So I really do wonder what's going to happen on Saturday if the pressure does get to the Suns. I'm leaning Suns in a very close victory, but, man, it is so close right now. I could easily see Bucks in 6.
Great stuff, Evan. You guys can check him out on Twitter. You can also check out and subscribe to his Substack at sunscribe.substack.com. Thank you so much for your time, Evan, and good luck moving and covering the rest of this finals.
Appreciate it, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
No problem, Evan. We'll be back with more after this timeout.